Hello and welcome to edition 1817 of the Sid Vale and East Devon Talkie newspaper, being recorded in the Lee Brown Room in Sidmouth on Tuesday, the 23rd of April, 2024. Wendy and Peter Eagles are your editors this week. Mary Smith and Christine Hamer registered your return to pouches this morning. Sean Corrie can't make it this week, and so Anne-Marie Irish has kindly volunteered to take his place, joining our regular readers Annette Desmond, Rose Pope and Dick Charles. Looking after the technical stuff and pressing all the right buttons is your producer, Mike Flynn. Any time after 6 in the morning is a good time to open your curtains. 8 o'clock in the evening is a good time to close them. If you need to contact the Talkie newspaper for any reason, our telephone number is 07552 766382. This is a mobile phone which is checked only every few days. So please leave your number and a message. Wendy will ring you back. The first half of this week's news covers Honiton, Axminster, East Devon in general, and then Branscombe with Beer and Seaton. We'll then cover what's on. The second half has more general news from East Devon, then Ottery St Mary, news from Sidmouth and Tipton St John. So, without further ado...
Hello, this is Anne-Marie with news from Honiton. Melvin Baldock is the latest member to be elected to Honiton Town Council. A by-election was held on Thursday, April the 11th, when Melvin Baldock was elected with 408 votes. John Taylor came second with 197 votes. Turnout for the election was 11.6%. One seat was up for grabs in the St Michael's ward of Honiton. Nomination papers were available by post from the returning officer at East Devon District Council, from the town clerk at Honiton Town Council, and from Honiton Town Council's website, where further information about the election process can be found. Wiscombe Park, the speed hill climb venue near Honiton, is gearing up for the opening event of the 2024 season. Taking place on April the 27th to 28th is the Wallbridge Spring event. Southwest Motorsport fans will be able to see the UK's fastest cars and drivers in action at 12 events, arranged over 6 race weekends through to mid-September. And whatever your particular interest in motorsport, there will be plenty to keep you entertained. Cars from the earliest days of motoring will be competing in the Vintage Sports Car Club meeting in May. In July, Wiscombe Park hosts the British Championships, the highlight of the year. Competitors travel from all over the UK to test their skills on the challenging 1,000-yard course and hope to leave with vital points towards the National Hill Climb title. In speed hill climbing, there are classes for all cars, from standard road going to highly modified and single-seater racing cars, which are very similar to Formula One cars. And it is not all about cars. At some Wiscombe events, bikes, trikes and sidecars also compete, with the closing event of the season reserved exclusively for 2- and 3-wheeled competition. Wiscombe Park gives you close access to the course and enables you to experience the speed and sound of the cars and bikes being pushed to the limit by highly skilled drivers and riders. There is access to the paddock area all day, allowing a close look at the cars and bikes, and you can chat to the drivers and riders. It is a very relaxed and friendly atmosphere. There is also a good selection of food and refreshment available. In 2023, Wiscombe Park Tillycourt Tree Quarry's champion, Paul Reynolds, begins the defence of his title at the first event, driving his very powerful Caterham Hayabusa. In July, the current British champion, Wallace Menzies, will be in action. Last year, he set a new outright hill record in his Gould GR59M on his way to clinching his fourth consecutive British title. He will be trying very hard to achieve his fifth title this year and maybe the Wiscombe Hill record again. Ottery St Mary's Ed Hollier will also start the defence of his Association of Southwestern Motor Clubs title, driving his fourth HC, in which he sets a new Wiscombe class record last season. For all the latest news and to purchase tickets at a discount, please visit the website www.wiscombepark.co.uk or on Facebook. A pub has accidentally found its way back into a family after 50 years. The Heathfield Inn in Honiton was brought back to life by a new landlord last year, who also later realised he had a closer connection to it than he first thought. David Veal, 38, said it had always been his dream to run a pub, having lived and breathed hospitality since he was a teenager. He started out washing dishes at the age of 14 and over the last 24 years has worked his way up through front of house, supervisor and kitchen roles. While he was keen to take on a pub, he admitted he was nervous when he got the opportunity to run the Heathfield Inn. After giving the place a complete makeover, he said locals soon flocked back, despite some having been initially wary of a new face at their local. He said, "I've worked my way up through and I thought it's time to take the plunge. I put everything on the line and everything into this and it's an absolute success. It's always been my goal and my dream, so I was very nervous. It took a couple of weeks for the locals to introduce themselves, get used to me, and there were a few that were a little bit dubious, but they've all been won over. I've had such a good response from the locals." My first visit to Heathfield was 16 years ago, and when I first came in again last year, it was almost like walking back into a time warp. It was like a time capsule. Nothing had changed. The red carpet was exactly the same. There's so much support for the quiz nights, for the Sunday lunches, from the trades that come in from the industrial estate. Across the board, it's gone wild. It's a big chocolate box, thatched pub. It's in the middle of a housing estate. It's got warmth. It's got atmosphere. It's got two log burners and a really inviting feel to it. I think that's what makes people want to come back. When David initially announced on his social media accounts he was taking on the pub, he received more than 100 excited comments and messages from friends and family, but there was one in particular which stood out. A cousin he hadn't seen for around 8 or 9 years, and who David had thought lived the other side of Exeter, reached out to say the Heathfield Inn was his local pub and promised to pay him a visit. The cousin visited the next day, but it was more than just a family reunion, as he took his wife with him, who explained that her grandfather had been the one to convert the building from a farmhouse into the Heathfield Inn in the 1970s. David said, "Through marriage, it's now back in the family. I couldn't believe it." Pub company Green King said it has been impressed by David's management of the pub, saying he has surpassed his yearly sales forecast in just 7 months. It put that down to his warm-hearted, welcoming approach, as well as his ability to bring the community together through events such as quiz nights. To celebrate his achievements, he has been invited to be a VIP guest at the company's Night of Excellence. David said, "I was gobsmacked to be invited, with it having so many pubs and licensees. It is blown away with what I'm doing and at how much beer I order, my figures, my occupancy rates. To get invited for a bit of recognition is really nice." A blustery start to the day, with Honiton Running Club catching the bus from Seaton to the start of the race at Exmouth. A well-organised event by Sidmouth RC gave runners shelter to wait before braving the slightly extended 22-mile course along the East Devon scenic coastline. First main checkpoint after Exmouth is Budley, before the first main climb to Peak Hill and into Sidmouth, before moving onto the harder cliff section to Branscombe, Beer, before competing at Seaton. A total of 8 HRC runners took part on what was a dry and mild day, but not underfoot, with varying depths of mud aplenty, frustrated at times by an erratic and sometimes wild gusts of wind along the cliffs. First back for Honiton was Ben Stone, who'd already ran 20 miles just prior to the race at just over 4 hours, followed by Stephen Boyes, taking a medal for the first over 60 male, finishing at 4 hours 13 minutes, with Nick Couch, who is in great form, finishing 2 places behind. Tim Wigram and Mark Newsom were next, followed by Rebecca Stevens, seemingly getting stronger, finishing 4 hours 51 minutes. Jake Heath, his first significant run after a 100-mile trail event, Mark Dallin and Andrew Foster completing the HRC lineup a few minutes later.
Hello, I'm Annette, bringing you news from Axminster. A model railway in Axminster town centre has stalled over recent months, and organisers are now seeking a new home for it. The model depicts the old Axminster to Lyme Regis line and is on display at the former River Cottage store. It ran smoothly since its launch in early December until an insurance inspection on behalf of property owners Palmer's Brewery questioned the electrical safety. Since then, it has remained static and unlit. But the volunteers behind the project insist that it has a future and have now issued an appeal to find a new home, with plans to raise funds for a wider initiative that perpetuates memories of what is known as the Lyme Billy era. While the 3 iconic Lyme Billy locos that ran for much of the line's 62-year history relied on steam, the model is powered by electricity. Barry Hedges, who is one of the team leading the project, told the Herald, "The layout actually draws its power from a neighbouring supply with automatic external cutout in the event of problems. The layout itself has a controller with a further automatic cutout in the event of overheating. Palmer's made this layout possible by allowing us community use of the building, and we will always be grateful to them. We always knew that ultimately we would have to move if the building were relet. So this simply brings forward the need to find a new home and opens the way to a whole string of allied projects. A crowdfunder is now planned in order to underpin the wider project. In the meantime, the group are keen to hear from anyone who has ideas on a new location for the model." If you have ever wondered what goes on behind the doors of Axminster's Freemasons Lodge, now there's a chance to find out. Freemasonry is a historic organisation that has its roots in the traditions and practices of the stonemasons who built the great cathedrals and castles of the Middle Ages. The members of Axminster's Lodge, Virtue and Honour, are holding an open day at the Masonic Hall in South Street on Saturday, April the 27th, from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. Admission is free, and visitors will be given a tour of the lodge and presentations about the history of Freemasonry in general and its association with Axminster in particular. There will be the chance to view previously unseen Masonic artifacts and exhibits that date back to the lodge's foundation by William Tucker in 1844. Visitors will also learn about famous Freemasons and other interesting information, such as the story of Elizabeth Aldworth, the Lady Freemason, and the courageous struggle of Freemasons at the Battle of the Alamo in 1836. There will be a free-to-enter quiz when the winner can decide which local cause receives a cash prize, and free refreshments in the refectory where visitors can talk to members about Freemasonry. The lodge press officer, Martin King, a local resident who has been a Freemason for 58 years and a member of Lodge Virtue and Honour for nearly 20, said the aim of the event is to promote a better understanding of Freemasonry in general and an insight into the contribution made by the members of the lodge to the community of Axminster for over the years. The current worshipful Master of Lodge of Virtue and Honour will be presenting checks to a number of Axminster-based good causes later in the year. For more information, call 079 00220 390 or email info@axminsterfreemasons.co.uk. And now a letter from S. Lloyd of Taunton. I am a visitor from Taunton, caring for a relative in Axminster. On April the 10th, I wanted one first-class stamp at the town centre post office. Arriving with my dog, I was faced with a sign on the door: no dogs. There was nowhere to tie my dog. The post office was empty of customers, so I entered the shop to place my dog just inside the door for safety. A member of the staff called across the shop to say no dogs. I asked from the door, could they sell me a first-class stamp? They replied, no, sorry, no dogs. Exiting the post office, I put my dog on the pavement next to the busy road, dropped the lead and re-entered the post office alone to buy one stamp. During the transaction, I requested, would the post office consider placing a ring outside the shop to secure a dog safely and enable the customer to enter the premises? I was informed this was not possible due to insurance. Throughout this whole experience, no other persons entered the post office and the two members of post office staff remained behind the counter.
Hello, I'm Dick with some items from East Devon. Exeter will benefit from a long-lasting legacy of participation in sport created by the Women's Rugby World Cup 2025 after the city was formally unveiled as a host for the prestigious tournament. Sandy Park will be a host venue for the Women's Rugby World Cup, which gets underway in 500 days. Seven matches are expected to be played at the home of Exeter Chiefs in August and September 2025. And the launch event at Sandy Park celebrated Impact 25, a transformational legacy programme that has seen £12 million of government funding committed to women and girls' grassroots rugby, already as part of Women's Rugby World Cup 2025. The aim of growing the game throughout the country, Impact 25 will be delivered by the RFU in partnership with the UK government, Sport England and UK Sport. The programme will provide substantial improvements in facilities and greater opportunities for females at all levels of the game in England, with a range of support being offered to clubs across four key pillars: facility development, coaches and match officials, playing and volunteering, and community and fan engagement. And to celebrate 500 days to go to the curtain raiser of the Rugby World Cup 2025, the Tournament Legacy Programme was announced at Exeter's Sandy Park. Dozens of young players from local rugby clubs were joined by World Rugby's Chief of Women's Rugby, Sally Horrocks, as well as leading figures from Exeter Rugby Club and Exeter City Council. Bindu Arjun, Chief Executive of Exeter City Council, said, "The City Council is delighted to support the launch of the Women's Rugby World Cup England 2025 here in Exeter. I've absolutely no doubt that the Women's World Cup England 2025 will be just as important for the city as the men's tournament was a decade earlier. As well as placing Exeter firmly in the global spotlight once again, with all the benefits that it brings, it will leave a lasting legacy of increased participation in sport by women and girls in the city. That will be a fantastic achievement." Tony Rose, CBE, Chairman and CEO of Exeter Rugby Club, said, "The impact of hosting fixtures during 2015 Rugby World Cup was transformational for a number of clubs in the Southwest. I firmly believe that we will see an even greater impact on women's sport in our region as we host 7 WRWC fixtures in 2025. An Exmouth Coast Watch building had to be evacuated after it was battered by stormy weather last week. It's feared that the building may have to be condemned. Volunteers at Exmouth's National Coast Watch Institution, NCI, arrived at their lookout station on Tuesday, April the 9th, to find that part of the foundations of one of the two buildings had collapsed into the sea. In a Facebook post, NCI Exmouth said, "Coast Watch House suffered damage last night in the storm, and the property has now been evacuated, with the council propping it up temporarily. Looks like we will need a new home." Some people refer to this building as the old first aid hut, but it's been a Coast Watch building for the last 25 years. Station manager Peter Oliver told the BBC that contractors have started work to make the area safe. He said the other lookout tower has been unaffected and that operations would continue there. He said, "We believe the decision will be to condemn the building. We'll lose our training facilities, which is problematic, but not insurmountable. We've been able to recover most of the materials inside and move them into people's garages. The team has been absolutely brilliant. You just can't beat the sea." Poltimore Music and Arts Festival will still go ahead, despite the fire that tore through the house last week. The festival will literally rise from the ashes, taking place as planned on Saturday the 25th and Sunday the 26th of May, but will now be in the grounds of Poltimore House, because there is now a 10-metre exclusion zone around the building. The fire last Tuesday, April the 9th, which is being treated as arson, caused hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of damage and destroyed two decades of restoration work. But the structure of the house is still intact, and the Poltimore House Trust, the community and other supporters, including the music festival team, are now all the more determined to bring the house back into use for the public. The Music in Devon initiative, who are behind the festival, say they've both been inundated with offers of support and practical help to stage the event, which had originally been planned as a fundraiser for further work on Poltimore House. The festival will now have its main music stage in the grounds behind the house, and the acoustic stage, which was going to be indoors, will be at the top of Lime Tree Avenue. Performances on the main stage will run at opposite timings to the second stage, so no one will have to miss any acts. Two East Devon photographers have been named in the 2024 Southwest Coast Path Photographer of the Year competition. James Loveridge from Dorset was named as Photographer of the Year for his picture of Lyme Regis. And Alex Walton from Sidmouth won the Urban Lines category. James's image captures the power of Storm Ciaran as nature shows its force and unleashes its energy upon Lyme Regis Cobb. The winning aerial photograph beat tough competition from over 1,500 entries across the southwest. James takes home not only the title, but wins a £500 voucher from Luxury Coastal Holidays and two return train tickets courtesy of sponsors Great Western Railway. A panel of three judges, including Jessica Lennon, lecturer in photography at the University of Plymouth, who said of the winning image, "The winning photograph impressed both in its beauty and in its message. It clearly shows the force of nature, with the cob being blanketed by the white, churning sea. In contrast, dark and heavy clouds passed by, allowing only little light to come through and reminding us of looming danger ahead. The Southwest Coast Path is unique but also vulnerable, especially to extreme weather conditions, which we have particularly experienced in the past 12 months. This image is an excellent example of how powerful photography can be in letting us stop in our tracks and raising awareness for what is happening now." James Loveridge said of his win, "I've won the climate change category previously with photos of storms of the Jurassic Coast where I live and thought this was my best capture yet and a unique one to be able to get an aerial image during such a powerful storm. We're seeing increasing numbers of storms in the Jurassic Coast in recent years, which I document by getting videos and photographs of all of the major rock falls in West Dorset, and we often see the Southwest Coast Path having to be moved inland as a result. It's great to have won the overall competition for the first time, so I thank the judges and feel lucky that I was in the right place at the right time and the conditions were right to get this photograph." Alex Walton from Sidmouth also won the Southwest Coast Path Photographer of the Year in the Urban Lines category.
Hello, I'm Rose, and here's some news from Branscombe, Bere and Seaton. A historic country pub has been named the best in Devon for the second year in a row. The Mason's Arms in Branscombe dates back to the 1400s and had a £2 million refurbishment in 2022. The St Austell Brewery pub was included in the Sunday Times 100 Best Places to Stay in the UK list last month, and it is celebrating another accolade after being crowned county winner in the National Pub and Bar Awards. Manager David Putt said he was ecstatic and blown away at its latest honour, and it means the pub is now up for National Pub of the Year at the grand final in June. He said there are so many amazing pubs in Devon, so it's an honour to be named the best in the county. "We were very proud to win the accolade in 2023, our opening year, but even prouder to have been nominated again for the second year in a row. We have continued to improve our offer and deliver consistently high-quality guest experiences during that time, which is testament to our brilliant team at the Mason's Arms. We're really looking forward to the grand finals in June. The pub puts on a range of community events, including the Branscombe Beer Festival. The event will return from May the 3rd to the 6th and will feature 20 beers from 5 breweries with a special beer made by the Mason's Arms in collaboration with Bath Ales. Seven members of the Beer Coast Guard Rescue Team have received awards for saving the life of a young woman who had fallen down a cliff. Emergency services, including the Beer and Lyme Regis Coast Guard Rescue Teams, police, ambulance and Sidmouth Independent Lifeboat, were called out to a 230-foot cliff near Lyme Regis in January 2021. Beer Coast Guard Rescue Team set up rope rescue equipment on a narrow coastal path, and cliff technician Kevin Gosling was rigged up to go down the cliff and reach the casualty. He found her halfway down, uninjured by the fall, but clinging to shrubbery on a small ledge. Mr. Gosling worked with the rest of the rescue team to bring her to safety. Mr. Gosling and six other members of the team received commendations for meritorious service at a ceremony at the Axe Yacht Club on Thursday, April the 11th, attended by Deputy Chief Coast Guard Matt Leet, Divisional Commander James Instance, Area Commander Drew Parkinson, and Senior Coast Guard Operations Officer Sam Houston. The figures are in. In 2023, Operation Rudolph handed out more than 550 gifts from Santa and 179 meal box deliveries, providing food for over 729 meals. A total of 230 hot meals were provided by more than 50 volunteers on Christmas Day, and 1,500 people were supported, which organiser Sharon Thorne said is a 60% increase on last year, with a 100% increase on meal boxes and gift bags. Owners of Pebbles, Seaton, Carly and James also provided a community meal for people in Seaton by opening up their cafe on Christmas Day. Every year, Operation Rudolph look at how they can better the event. Some things have already been identified and they need some help. See more on their Facebook post. Sharon Thorne, organiser of Operation Rudolph, said, "I appreciate not everyone can make it, but as this is a community-led and delivered project, everyone's views and suggestions are welcome. So please feel free to drop me a line with things you would be willing to take a lead on." A community fridge has celebrated a one-year anniversary after successfully reducing food waste and supporting residents along the way. Seaton Library's community fridge launched on April the 14th, 2023, and it has since become an emblem of generosity and community spirit, as well as preserving thousands of meals that were otherwise destined for disposal. Situated within Seaton Library, the community fridge operates using a take what you can use and leave some for the next person policy. In its first year of operation, the initiative has managed to prevent over 6,000 kilos of food from going to waste. This has not only promoted sustainability and contributed to reduced greenhouse gas emissions, but also fostered a more circular economy. The fridge continuously benefits from the generous contributions of Seaton's Save Food Hub, who regularly stocked the fridge with an array of fresh produce, pantry basics, and even fresh bunches of flowers. Volunteers and library staff have been instrumental in the fridge's successful operation, especially maintaining cleanliness and promoting awareness within the community about the initiative. Commending the initiative, Seaton Library Supervisor Mr. Richard O. Mahoney said, "We are incredibly grateful to everyone who has contributed to the success of our community fridge over the past year. Together we have made a real difference in reducing food waste and addressing food insecurity in our community. As we celebrate this milestone, we look forward to continuing this important work and expanding our impact in the years to come." The one-year anniversary was celebrated last Saturday with an event in the Seton Library. The gathering acknowledged the phenomenal contribution of the library staff and volunteers, while also offering fun and games for attending children on the theme of food. Part of the celebration involved making cakes using ingredients that would otherwise have been discarded.
And it's Peter again with some What's On. Thursday, April the 25th, an original abstract art exhibition, Kenaway House, 10:30 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. George Porter, free entry, and this runs until the 30th of April. Stories of Sidmouth, Memory Swap. This is still on Thursday. Sidmouth Library, 10:30 a.m. until 12 noon. Come and tell us how your Sidmouth has changed over the last 70 years. Chat and tea, free entry. And something rather different, Axvale Hunt, point-to-point horse racing on Sunday the 28th of April at Stafford Cross near Seton. And the postcode is EX246HZ. First race is at 1:30 p.m. It's £15 cash for per person entry, which includes a race card. Under 16s are free. There's bookmakers, stalls, bar and food. For more information, 07912 217 250. Tickets will go on sale later this month for this year's Sidmouth Summer Play Festival at the Manor Pavilion Theatre. The festival will run from Monday, 24th of June, until Saturday, September the 21st, and it comprises 12 plays over 12 weeks, with a break in the middle for the Sidmouth Folk Festival. This year's offerings include Abigail's Party by Mike Lee, Yes Prime Minister by Anthony Jay and Jonathan Lynn, God of Carnage by Yasmina Reza, and Dial M for Murder by Frederick Knott. Tickets will go on sale on Wednesday, April the 24th. The festival is now in its 11th year and is one of the longest repertory theatre seasons in the country. In repertory theatre, a company of actors rehearse and perform back-to-back plays in-house for the duration of the season, often rehearsing the following week's play whilst performing each night. The intense process creates a buzz and brings a vibrant energy to the hosting venue. And for your diary, a Sherlock Holmes comedy show is coming to the Beehive in Honiton on May the 17th. Sherlock's Excellent Adventure is a comedy penned by James Barry and inspired by Arthur Conan Doyle's renowned detective. After enjoying successful runs at Brighton and Edinburgh fringes, touring the UK three times, the production by Our Star Theatre Company is now making its way to Honiton. Tickets will be available at £15 and £10 for students. To book tickets, contact the box office at 01404 384050 between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. on weekdays.
Hello, Anne-Marie here again with news from East Devon. The final scoreline, which is all that history will remember, was cruel on Exeter Chiefs, whose young side went toe-to-toe with the five-time champions cup winner Toulouse until the 48th minute, before getting blown away 64-26 at the Stade Ernest Wallon on Sunday. Exeter took the lead 19-17 in the 42nd minute, through Henry Slade's fourth successful penalty kick of the game after an early try from Ethan Roots. But then the floodgates opened and the French side ran in 9 tries in total with a defiant Zach Wimbush score for Chiefs. Devon County Council is to create a new service for domestic abuse victims with the help of nearly $1.5 million in government funding. The county's integrated domestic abuse service will commence next April to improve access, prevention and early intervention for people at risk or already suffering harm. At present, the county provides contracts to charities and community organisations to support victims, but it was felt that doing this would not meet the needs of those requiring help or fulfil the county's legal obligations. The Domestic Abuse Act, which came into force in 2021, put a new duty on councils to provide formal domestic abuse support. And Devon receives $1.48 million a year from the Department of Levelling Up, Housing and Communities towards funding the service. Crucially, the legislation recognised for the first time children and young people as victims of domestic abuse and lowered the age of adults in such scenarios to 16. The Council's Cabinet heard this is of particular significance for Devon, given that the 167 domestic abuse cases in the 2022-2023 financial year included 1,081 children. Just over 2/3 of cases referred to Devon Domestic Abuse Community Support Service have children or young people under 18 in the household. South West Water is confident there will be no need for hosepipe bans in Devon this year, even if we see prolonged periods of hot and dry weather. In 2022, a hosepipe ban was put in place in Cornwall and parts of North Devon after the biggest drought in the region for more than 130 years. That was extended to other parts of Devon in 2023. Since then, a combination of heavy rainfall, customers doing more to save water, and investment from South West Water has seen reservoir levels rise across the region. Earlier this month, South West Water announced its two biggest reservoirs, Roadford in Devon and Colliford in Cornwall, have both recharged to more than 90% of their capacity. To help maintain water resilience for now and the future, South West Water said it was investing more than $125 million to increase resources in Devon by 30% and in Cornwall by 45%. The leader of Devon County Council has announced he is leaving the post after 15 years. John Hart became leader of Devon's opposition Conservative Party in 2007 and won power of the County Council in the 2009 election. He has remained leader since then. The Devon Conservative Group will hold a ballot to decide the county's next leader, and John will remain in post until then. He said, "It is the right time for me to stand down as leader. The County Council is in a good position with a balanced budget. We've managed the budget this year so that we can now propose an allocation of an extra £10 million to repairing potholes and carrying out extra drainage work on our roads. We've concluded an agreement with the government for £95 million of national funding to support our special needs education, and within weeks we will hopefully finalise our devolution deal." East Devon saw broadly the same number of new houses begun in 2023 and 2022, new figures show. But across England, the house building sector has seen a slowdown, with an industry body accusing the government of putting short-term politics over the needs of the country when it comes to building new homes. Figures from the Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities show building began on around 740 homes in East Devon in 2023, close to the 730 starts the year before.
And now some news from Ottery St Mary. Cold Harbour Farm Shop and Field Kitchen has been recognised in this year's Countryside Alliance Awards as a champion of local food and drink in the South West. The Ottery St Mary business was awarded highly commended in the local food and drink category, an impressive achievement as thousands of nominations were received. Co-owner Andrea Broadhurst said, "We were proud just to be named amongst the finalists, so it's a real honour to be recognised as highly commended. Huge congratulations to the winners and runners-up. These are all brilliant rural businesses who work really hard." These particular awards were decided by public vote. We'd like to thank all our customers for voting for us. We really do appreciate you making the effort to support us. The Countryside Alliance Awards, now in their 17th year, recognise rural businesses across five categories, including Best Local Food, Best Butcher, Best Pub, Best Rural Enterprise and Best Village Shop and Post Office. These businesses go the extra mile within their communities, supporting the local economy and championing local goods and services. Ottery residents are being urged to use or lose a local bus service that has already been cut back by Devon County Council. The 381 bus, operated by Dartline and funded by the County Council, used to run on Mondays and Thursdays, connecting Talleyford with the town centre and hospital. But the Monday service has just been scrapped because of a fall in passenger numbers, and there are fears that the Thursday service will also be discontinued. The Town Council and the County Councillor for Otter Valley, Jess Bailey, have criticised the decision to withdraw the Monday service and the fact that there was no public consultation about it. They expect the loss of the Monday buses to increase demand for the community transport run by the Ottery Help Scheme, which is already operating at full capacity, providing more than 100 journeys every week for medical appointments and essential errands. Losing the Thursday bus would make matters even worse. A spokesperson for Ottery Town Council said, "The key to saving this vital transport link lies in community support. With only two or three passengers per trip on Mondays, that service's sustainability was put into question. Residents are encouraged to consider using the Thursday service more regularly to demonstrate ongoing demand." The Town Council and Councillor Bailey feel that preserving this vital link is about more than just numbers. It's about supporting community cohesion, accessibility, and ensuring everyone's right to mobility. The fate of Ottery St Mary's Thursday bus service depends on community action. It's time to show that this service is not just a convenience but a lifeline that must be protected for the well-being and prosperity of all residents. Use it or risk losing it. Josephina Gorry writes for the Herald. "When I wrote an article attempting to answer the question of why Ottery was doing so well, I mentioned that one of the reasons for this town's success was the hard work put in by traders to provide excellent and innovative services that make people want to return. Some may think that my love for this town causes me to be over-enthusiastic and unrealistic at times. However, this is not the case, and to prove it, This week I will be writing about two places in town that have taken the hospitality service to new heights by offering something special and inspiring that caters to the needs of not only this town, but the entire country. The Coffee Bank and the Silver Otter. When you speak to Louise Jones, the manager and driving force behind the Coffee Bank, and her team, you quickly understand why everything they offer has the seal of her enthusiasm. I was curious about how the idea for the Coffee Bank was born, as well as their goals and plans for the future. The Coffee Bank was born out of a conversation with the landlord of the building, of an idea of needing somewhere in town for caregivers to enjoy a hot drink, a yummy treat, and safe spot for play, interaction, and learning after a business we loved when our children were small was unfortunately no longer in business. I wanted to try and create this and more than a coffee shop. Running an independent business can be really hard at times, a real balancing act, whilst you try to be each role in work and home life. But bringing what we bring to our community, helping each customer, charities and beyond, with passion and care, brings my dream to life. My team are amazing, and the shop wouldn't be what it is without them, or the wonderful people who walk through the door each day. I love that there is somewhere for all in Ottery with our differing shops, which means we all work well together. Talking to Helen Holmes, Able to Achieve Limited, Enterprise Coordinator, although the Silver Otter is not only a cafe, but a learning centre supporting adults to learn through work preparation, still you find the same enthusiasm that seems to be the trademark of these two places. I asked Helen how they managed to combine serving customers and training staff, especially when the cafe is so busy. It can be a difficult balancing act sometimes, but given the compliments we receive, I am confident we are succeeding. We invest a lot of time in understanding our learners' individual strengths and giving them confidence. On the customer's side, we are very fortunate to have regulars who recognise the value of what we are doing and support us faithfully. It adds up to a very rewarding role for me, especially when you see their little faces light up when they have reached one of their goals, and also when you see the relationship that has developed between the learners and customers. The two cafes are situated in the Cultural Triangle, a project very close to my heart that offers history enthusiasts ample opportunities to satisfy their curiosity. It is also an excellent place to relax after touring and relish a cup of coffee with a twist while your children play or interact with those learning the tricks of the trade. Whatever you are looking for when visiting the Southwest, be assured you will find it in Ottery. The harmony among our traders is our secret, reflected in their excellent service. We hope to see you soon.
Hello, it's Dick again with more news items from Sidmouth. Last week was Sidmouth Bowls President's Day. It was run over two sessions, morning and afternoon, with lunch in between. The lunch was amazing. That once again was prepared by Debbie, Lynn and Captain Sue. Our president, John Mason, apart from the players, invited some of our old-timers who have done such a lot for the club in bygone years. This is his second year as club president, and it is usual to vote in a new president every year. However, he did such a good job, we decided to vote him in again. Now the bowling. The morning winners were Scott Archer, Barbara and Alan Donaldson, and skip Zena Johnson, with a great plus 14 score. The afternoon winners were Joan Crook, Debbie and Cedron Kane, and skip Mary Timms, with a plus 5 score. unusual to play partners together, but luckily there were no fights. Mr. Mason presented all the winners and helpers with a gift, and it was really good to see so many congregate in the bar for a sociable few hours and finish some of that lovely food. Then a couple of friendlies to finish the week. A refurbished thatched cottage in Sidmouth is heading to auction with a freehold guide price of £225,000. The stables in Sid Road has two bedrooms and has exposed timber beams, a vaulted ceiling and a bespoke oak staircase. It will be auctioned on May the 1st. The stables is being auctioned in arrangement with Your Move of Sidmouth. Full details of the house and a video tour is available on the Clive Mason website. Senior auction appraiser Audrey Smith said, "This is a rare opportunity to acquire this stunning two-bedroom thatch cottage. The stables has been extensively refurbished to a high standard and features a beautiful open-plan living area. It is located on the sought-after eastern side of Sidmouth and is about half a mile level walking distance to the town centre, and its range of individual shops, amenities, other facilities, and 3/4 mile from the seafront." The Sid Valley Food Bank has seen an increase in demand since the pandemic and now needs more volunteers to help them. They need help with administrative tasks and more trustees, shoppers, packers, donation point collectors or delivery drivers. There's also scope for people to join our major projects teams, including Christmas hampers. The food bank is manned entirely by volunteers, and since the pandemic and the rise in the cost of living, demand has doubled. In March 2021, the number of food parcels per month was 82, and the number of households supported was 22. But in 2024, the numbers has increased to 194 and 43. There's no sign of the numbers decreasing. While the food bank is in a healthy position for the year ending 31st of March 2024, it ran at a deficit due to the increased numbers and the increase in the cost of food. For more information, visit their website or call 07936 917 507. Two donkeys from Devon have gone on to their new home, providing support to a bereaved companion. A pair of donkeys from East Devon, who spent many years supporting their community, have since moved on to bring comfort and companionship to a lonely donkey who lost his old companion. Henry, aged 17, and 14-year-old James were under the Donkey Sanctuary's care and were always popular among staff and clients at the Donkey Assistance Activities Centre in Sidmouth. Centre manager Laurel Woodley said, "Despite their size, our clients soon came to learn that this did not determine their behaviour and that they were extremely gentle to be around." She highlighted the donkey's unique characteristics and encouraged people to regard them as unique individuals. After many years serving their community, James and Henry retired to the charity's rehoming scheme. And following health and behaviour assessments, the pair found a home in Cheshire. The new home belongs to Hazel and Lee, who owned another donkey called Gerald. Left bereaved after losing Chester, his horse companion. To help Gerald, his owners contacted the Donkey Sanctuary's welfare team. Donkey welfare advisor Keir Thomas said, "While the Donkey Sanctuary does not advise keeping donkeys as companions to horses, this was a circumstance which had arisen, and the owners were working hard to provide for the needs of both animals." She also noted that Henry and James, though both from the same herd, are individual donkeys, and she believed being different from each other would give Gerald time to make a connection with them. Upon the donkeys' arrival, Miss Thomas commented that they became more relaxed in each other's company and happily share their home. The fresh atmosphere has seen Henry and Gerald playing together, while James and Gerald recently started running together. In quieter moments, Henry and James groom each other, an entirely new sight for their guardians. Hazel and Lee are also exploring new ways to enrich their lives by including peppermint cordial in their water, which the donkeys apparently love.
Now some more news from Sidmouth and some news from Tipton St John. Sidmouth Town Council works with many organisations across the community to support those living in or visiting the Sid Valley. At the April monthly meeting, two such organisations were represented, Southwest Water and Sidmouth School of Art. Southwest Water briefed councillors on its plans to update the sewage system in the Sid Valley. There are three components which, once installed, should significantly reduce the frequency with which untreated sewage is spilt into the Sid or the sea, something that has rightly been upsetting the community, whether or not they swim in the sea. The plan is to reduce the amount of clean water entering the foul sewer and to increase storage capacity. The first element is to line many of the sewers where there is infiltration from groundwater. This work has already started and more will be done. The second element is the separation of surface water from the sewers, for example in car parks. This will mean there is less sewage to treat, and so the system should not get overloaded. And the final element is to increase the size of the storage tank at the Ham, so more sewage can be stored before it is pumped up to Sidford for treatment. At the moment the current tank gets filled up too quickly in heavy rain, meaning that the excess has to be spilt untreated. The plan is to almost double the storage, and this work is scheduled to start in September and will take until spring 2025 to complete. The Town Council will continue to meet with Southwest Water to ensure the system is updated and meets the standards we all expect. In complete contrast, Sidmouth School of Art briefed councillors on the Festival of Flags they are planning during the summer. At the meeting, they asked for permission to use the council's catenary wires that are stretched across 4 Street and elsewhere, and which are normally used for the Christmas decorations. The idea is great, but the council wanted to ensure that firstly they are safe, but also that they would enhance the main shopping areas. The flags are to be designed to celebrate the many voluntary groups in the valley and will be done so under professional guidance, ensuring a good quality creation. Installation will be done by the same company that successfully install the lights each year. With these assurances, the council was very happy to give permission. We are all affected in some way by the cost of living crisis, and there is a wider impact in Sidmouth than you might think. On 20th of March, Sid Valley Help held a network meeting for other health and care organisations in the Sid Valley to share how this crisis has affected our organisations and those we support. We also wanted to find new ways of working together to reduce risks. Citizens' advice outlined the challenges facing clients attending the Tuesday Hub at Manstone Youth Centre. There is good support from the Food Bank and the EDDC Resilience Team. Problems are becoming more complex and housing is more difficult due to the shortage of rental properties in Sidmouth and their poor state. It is important that everyone who is eligible receives the benefits that they are entitled to. This was echoed by Gateway, that supports the homeless and those at risk of becoming homeless. Clients are already on the margins of managing, and the slightest thing can tip them over the edge into debt. Tenants often move into accommodation with few items of furniture. EDDC have agreed to help by pat testing electrical goods from previous tenants so they are reused. There is a need for a team of people that can move furniture and do small tasks to help ready for accommodation. The family liaison officer at Sidmouth Primary School described a progressively difficult situation to do with food poverty. About 22% of children at Sidmouth Primary receive free school meals, which is similar to the national average. Some children attend school without breakfast, and this has a huge impact on their learning, as they are unable to concentrate if they are hungry. A Tipton St John-based international reforestation charity has launched a monthly poetry and spoken word event. Word Forest, with founders Tracy and Simon West, will hold it at the Lee Brown Room at the Unitarian Hall in Sidmouth. Mr West said, "Wordplay will give poets and writers of prose a chance to perform their work with a microphone, perhaps for the first time, in front of an appreciative audience. It's always fascinating listening to pieces performed by their creators in the way they envisioned they would be. The Southwest is teeming with talent, and I can't wait to open the doors to let the wordy magic happen." The pair ran a similar event in Lyme Regis named Vittles and Verse, anticipating that wordplay will be an equal success. The first event is slated for April 20th, and will repeat on every third Saturday of the subsequent months. To catch the word magic, attendees are requested to arrive by 6:30 p.m. as the event begins promptly at 7 p.m. Admission is priced at £4 on the door and includes a light beverage. Additional plant-based snacks and refreshments will be available for purchase. Apart from a social and literature-focused affair, Wordplay will also serve as a fundraising initiative. The proceeds generated beyond hall hire cost will aid in planting fast-growing trees in Kenya, which can grow up to 10 times faster than in the UK. Mr. West said that the trees could absorb a quarter ton of CO2 within 5 years, providing a tangible solution to global warming and hunger issues.
And that's our selection of the local news, especially for you this week. We thank today's team and the editors of the newspapers from which we have taken today's articles. They are the Midweek and Sidmouth Heralds and the Express and Echo. We have abbreviated some of the articles in order to cover as many stories as possible. As always, we thank the Royal Mail for their free delivery service. Please return your pouch and memory stick promptly, preferably using a pillar box. If you pass them over a post office counter, the post office stick difficult to remove labels over them. We hold just 2 address labels for each listener, so if you have 2 pouches at home, we won't be able to send you any more. There is a website where these recordings can be heard using a computer, iPad or smartphone. Its address is www.eastdevontalkingnewspaper.co.uk. This team expects to be back with you on the 11th of June. And so until then, it's goodbye from all of us.